Kia ora whānau. Today we have a really awesome service today lined up, and it's my honour and privilege to introduce the WOC crew and who they are. WOC stands for Warriors of Change, and who they are is that they're a group of young adults who are disciples who are trying to bring the kingdom down to Ranwick Park, trying to create a better community in Ranwick Park. So they're an awesome crew, and what they're going to bring to us today, they've just come back from Manila, so they're going to bring back the reflections, the experiences, and they're going to share from the heart of what they saw and what they did over there. And also, they'll be performing some items as well. So could we just have a practice for claps? So everyone practice clapping. Awesome. If there's an item that you enjoy, please clap. It'll be awesome. And yeah, these guys are awesome individuals. I know some of them. And our church has a really awesome relationship with the WOC crew as well. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce the MC called Lafawai. Am I correct? So everyone go, hi, Lafawai. Awesome. She's a uni student and she went over with the WOC crew. She's not part of the WOC crew, but she went over for the experience as well. So I'm going to hand it over to Lafawai. Give her a hand, guys.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, as Wilson had briefly explained, that we had just come back from Manila, well, about 6 weeks ago, and I'll just briefly explain to you what we basically did over there and what it was for. And while I'm doing that, can I please ask Ben to prepare? So about 6 weeks ago, a group of 16 of us went over to the Philippines, and we stayed in Quezon City in Manila, where we each got put into host families and basically journeying with them. So it was a spiritual retreat trip where we got to journey with them and experience what it was like living in a third world country in poverty. And yeah, it was pretty amazing. It's hard to explain some of the things that we saw and felt over there. So we're only going to highlight the things that we can share with you today. We made so many different connections. Our families were awesome, just full of life. And yeah, what we can say is that God was well and truly alive in that community. There was just an endless amount of joy and happiness. And I guess it's to be expected being in a place like that where everyone just treasured every little thing that they had and there was nothing much to worry about. So Ben here, who's part of the team, has put together a little video clip, and he's just going to share with you visually what we kind of saw, felt, and heard over in the Philippines. Thank you.
Tonight, as we sing this song, we ask that the words would penetrate hearts all across the world, that our worship would be an example of hearts that have been set free. Father, help us to worship in spirit and in truth, with all that we have, with everything within us. And we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
You call me out upon the waters. The Creator knows where feet may fail. And there I find you in the mystery, in oceans deep, my faith will stand. And I'll call upon your name, and keep my eyes above the waves, when oceans rise. And you are mine.
So yeah, that was just a visual reflection of what we experienced while we were over there. As you can see, there was just an endless amount of joy in the community. People had smiles on their faces every day, and although it looked really bad, the conditions that people lived in, we really enjoyed every single moment of it. Like, we just loved being there, and it was really hard to say goodbye when we left. Just a bit about that video clip that we saw, that was about a community that was being demolished over there by the government to build a flash new city. And we walked down that community that was being demolished, and it was quite hard seeing that. You know, it's nothing that we can ever find here in New Zealand. Quite privileged to be in this country. So yeah, that was a walk that we would never ever forget for the rest of our lives. Up next we have Tanisha, and she's one of the team members who wrote a letter about what she felt and saw while we were over there. And a part of a requirement that was done over there was that we journaled every day, and that was about us kind of writing down what we felt and seeing what God was calling us to do while we were over there. So Tanisha's just going to share a bit about what she experienced with her family and the community.
Okay. Hi. So I just wrote this letter as a reminder to myself to remind myself what I did, like, not to forget what I saw there. So it's addressed to myself. Okay. Hey, Tanisha, how are you going? What are you doing with your life now? Are you where you wanted to see yourself 6 months ago or even 3 months ago? I want to tell you a story about a young girl who loved the glamorous life, who loved God, but loved money almost just as much. She didn't realize, but when she saw and understood that there are more important things in life, her perspective changed. You see, the things she was exposed to are not things she would see in her everyday life, and probably, if not for this trip, never would have. This girl is you. Remember walking down that street? At first, you didn't realize why you were brought here and why there was rubble all around you. But remember. Remember seeing that young boy in an old and dirty oversized shirt, so alone and no sight of his parents, or even yelling, "Good morning," but the response being, "No, it's a bad morning today." Remember seeing the police walk into the community, batons ready to beat anybody still in their own home. Do you remember that? Or how about that girl that skated up next to you and said, "I don't have a home," while pointing past you at the demolished community? There's something I'm really hoping you didn't forget about that walk. It's an essential part. Amongst the despair and pain, do you remember the smiles, the laughter, the children playing, the women chatting, the men rebuilding, the whole community throwing you a smile and a hello? Did you see the joy they had when they saw you? Please remember, it's so important. Don't feel numb to it. My prayer is that you are constantly praying and that your heart doesn't grow numb to what you saw that day, right up until what you've seen today. Those people touched you. You couldn't help but hurt for them. That fire that grew inside you when you saw it, is that still there? Keep praying. Don't lose touch. How about in your community? What did you hear? I remember the laughter, the banter. Amongst all the chaos, that's what I remember. Remember feeling so loved and appreciated. Remember being called beautiful more times than you could count. You know, God thinks this about you too. How about the church? Remember the heart they had for God, how hungry they were for him and sought him wholeheartedly, how inspired you were by the younger generation. Am I painting a clear picture? Poverty surrounded you. You were fully immersed. But just as strongly, joy surrounded you. Do you not remember seeing it in their faces, in Kate's face? How excited she was just to see you every morning. How they just took each day as it came. Be inspired. I hope with all my heart you haven't forgotten. That place had a special place in your heart, and I hope it still does. You learnt, you saw, you loved, you laughed, you cried, you felt, you experienced. Carry it out. Thank you.
Yeah, up next we have our boys who will be performing a slap dance that we shared over there with the community. And just talking about the culture, they're such a beautiful culture. They're just so humble, down to earth, and hungry for the Lord, and they just loved sharing everything about their culture with us. We had heaps of fun playing games. They exposed different meals to us, and so delicious. And we celebrated different things while we were over there, like birthdays. And on our final night there, we had our celebration, which was the joining of our community and just pretty much celebrating what we shared together in the past over those 2 weeks. And so this dance was what the boys took over to share with them, and they loved it. They just wanted us to keep going. But so the boys are just going to share with you what we took over there.
Hello. Kia ora. I was just gonna do something all together, like for all of us. I was getting one of the boys to demonstrate it. I was just saying, I'm Samoan, by the way. He's Tongan. This guy's a Maori. I was getting this guy to demonstrate it. It's cool. It's one of the claps. When we say Millie, everyone do this. Meet. They would say Batia, and then one clap. Michael, eh? So I'm the boss now. Jokes. Mid. Batia. Lua Pati. So Batia means one. And then Lua Pati, two clap. So we'll just get everyone to do that, and then we'll just go from here. Mid. Batia. Sorry, I didn't tell you that. And I say, hey, you say, ho. Okay? So, expect the unexpected. It's gonna be more coming. Let's go once more. Lua bot. Hey. Ho. Taika. Oh, come on, Taika. Nah, that's what we do in my culture here. Yeah. I was going to perform a slap dance, one of the traditional dances in Samoa. There's a long story behind the dance, but we got it from like slapping the mosquitoes around us, like mosquitoes are here. We invented from that. But then, you'll know it. Yep. Thanks. Well, hope you enjoy it.
Cook Island dance that we took over there.
Hi. mine will be only short, so just a little. I want to say hi to my Kittywinks family. I used to volunteer there, so that was last year. It was quite a long time, like 2 years I volunteered. But, okay.
So my name's Vanessa, if you didn't catch it. I experienced so much in Manila. I can go on and on and on about and bore you, but I'll just stay to one thing that is close and dear to my heart that happened in Manila. Okay. When I was young, I lost my mum. Well, I haven't said that out loud ever in my life. It's the first time, so you're quite privileged. being the oldest, I grew up faster than I should that day. I took a role that ruined me and made me that day. that day, I like questioned God a lot. I had so many questions, I was endless. And then as the years went by, I didn't hear much back from him, so I sort of just stopped and just went numb to that subject for like another few years after that. That's one subject. Sorry if it's muddled up. It's just, it will all connect in the end. Don't worry. So as I was going to Manila, I went there with many questions for my present self, about my future, about schooling, and I was just hoping that, you know, one day, or that God will show me through this experience what I should be really doing. And, yeah. So I went to Manila and I stayed with my family called the Areola family. It's quite a cool name. I thought it reminded me of like a brand of a butter or something, but they're really cool. I stayed with them for two weeks, and lived the life they did, immersed myself with them, and it's just amazing. So my mama Rose, she's the mum of the family. There's five of them, mum, dad, three kids, two boys, one girl. As I got to know my family, I formed a relationship with my mum, my Filipino mum, that I never thought I could get back again. Like, the feeling of that motherly love was just, I was a bit godsmacked because I haven't felt that in a long time. So I was like, wow, so this is how it felt. And then through that, I realized what God was saying. Like, he was there, but I think he answered questions way before they had forgotten about, you know, why my mum, why me? So it was amazing. God works in mysterious ways. So I went through questions about now, but he answered questions about when I was younger, and it's just, I can't explain it. So I can't exactly say what, tell you my questions and what God had answered for me. It's between me and him. And I'm still deciphering it and still scratching at the surface with it as well, because it's still so raw. But I guess I just want to say that God works in mysterious ways. And it may take years, days, hours that he answers you. But eventually he will, when you are still willing and ready. It's taken me years, but I got there. And still journeying with him. I guess through my experience in Manila, I was able to hear him for the first time. And I guess, yeah, I thank Manila for that. And my family in there, it was like, I wish I could take you all there with me and and just show you, but I guess, yeah. I just want to thank everyone for their prayers and thoughts as we went there, and yeah. So that's all I didn't want to share. There's so much I want to unfold, but I just can't. Not yet. Anyway, thank you.
It's become a part of our journey, and it's something that we're going to be journeying for the rest of our lives with.
Definitely God was calling us to do something when we went over there, and at the moment we're currently still processing the trip and what we've taken from it and what God's calling us to do with our lives. So yeah, hopefully you guys have enjoyed what we've shared so far. And yeah, thanks.
Good morning, everyone. In Tagalog, in Filipino, good morning is magandang umaga. So I've got to get everyone to repeat after me. Magandang umaga. Close. Again, so it's the first one is magandang, and then it's like tana umanga, so umanga. So magandang umaga. That'll do. Could I get everyone to get out their Bibles and turn to Mark 10:46, I think it is. We'll just have a little reading, something a bit more serious. Okay, in Mark 10:46, we have blind Bartimaeus receives his sight. So on 46. Then they came to Jericho as Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city. A blind man, Bartimaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called the blind man to the front. "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. Cheers. Can I just get Dave Pops to get up front, please?
Hi, everyone. Haven't they done well? Today we're going to try something a little bit different. I'm going to share the sermon with my daughter, Kata. So, Kataraina, you want to come up? We're just going to have a little bit of fun together. We're going to kind of try and tell two stories at the same time. Hopefully it works. I'm really proud of our Warriors of Change people. Aren't they awesome? Just a little bit about Warriors of Change. They all live locally. There's about 14 of us. And they're part of a discipleship and a leadership group. And every Monday night we meet at my place. We all gather together and we eat a lot of food. And we laugh and we play silly games. We pray together. We worship. We plan. And we support each other. It's a special place. It's a journey. Some are now in their fourth year. It's a place to belong and a place for everyone to connect. And we carry two values. And the first value is around commitment. And the second is service. And this is the commitment is to be committed to God and to each other. To partner with God, to work with our whānaus, to work in our neighbourhood, to care, to love, to bring the idea of God's kingdom into our neighbourhood, into the place that we call home. We celebrate life together. And our second commitment is our service. And that's for all of us to find a place where we can serve our neighbours and serve those around us. And for Warriors of Change, they run 4 youth programs in our neighborhood. And so it's quite a big commitment from all of them. There's quite a lot that they give. As well as that, they're often involved in some of our events, often visiting families, and sometimes they're involved in beautifying our neighborhood, like planting native trees, which we did a couple of years ago. A fascinating thing that's happening, which I really still can't get my head around, that I've never actually had this problem before. It's quite a unique problem. But at one stage last year, we had too many volunteers. There were too many leaders coming to our youth program. Quite a unique problem, eh? that we wish we had that more often. And so we had to start another youth program for our teenagers, and we divided everyone up and so that everyone had a place where they could give. I think it's quite funny, really. Funny because, unfortunately, Randwick Park has a reputation for being a place that has a whole lot of problems. And I was at a meeting with our Mandarewa board just last week, 2 weeks ago, and one of our board members said, no, you're not going to get sheltered bus stations because your neighbourhood wrecks things like that. And that saddened me. But you see, I mean, I guess there are some problems, but it all depends how you see your neighbourhood. Is it a neighbourhood that is half full, like a glass of water, or half empty? And we choose to see the place as a place that's full of potential and full of beauty, rather than a place that's full of need. I'm so proud of our team. It was mid-January 2014. We boarded a plane. We left our beautiful shores of New Zealand and landed in Manila, and we walked towards our destination.
So in my host family, my dad, he was called Kuia Willie, and Kuia is a word you use to show respect to people older than you, and Ate is for the woman. So he worked as a construction worker, and I learned during my stay that a construction worker was a job that was paid really little, despite the hard work and stuff. So he would work 8-hour days for 6 days a week, and he was paid less than minimum wage, which alone is 450 pesos, which is about 17 New Zealand dollars. So he was probably paid $12 a day, which is very hard to live on. And then my host mum, Mama Belen, she stayed at home and did like all the house errands and stuff, and she spoke very little English. Like, I remember when we first arrived there, and I met her, and I was kind of trying to talk with her because I was still like a bit nervous, and she was just kind of like smiling and nodding. And then I kind of like kept trying to talk with her, and she wasn't responding. And then I realized, oh, actually, she can't speak any English. Like, so yeah, that was a bit hard at first. And I was thinking, oh no, I wonder. Hopefully, someone else in the family could. So I had, but yeah, she was the best host with me. Like, she fed me all the time. I thought I was going to go over there and lose weight, but no. And she just treated me like her own daughter, which was really cool. And then I had two host sisters, Jelena, she was 15, and Ate Jocelyn, she was 28 years old. Jelena, she went to high school, so she spoke quite good English, but she was very, very shy. When I first met her, it was also hard to talk with her, but as the days went by, we became closer. Ate Jocelyn, she worked for a shipping company who also has a branch in Auckland, and she worked in the call centre, so she had really good English as well. And, she was probably my closest host sister that I came. We became really close. And it was really hard to say goodbye to them. So our house in the slum was probably about the same size as my kitchen. It had two main rooms that were separated with a sheet and a little door. On one side of the kitchen, there was the kitchen and a little dining room and a bamboo bed that my host parents would sleep on. And on the other side was where I slept, and my host sisters would sleep as well. And we had a little keyboard that all the kids would come and play with every day, and a little TV. And then our bathroom, which they call the CR room, comfort room, was next to the little kitchen, kind of not even a sink, it's just like a bench. And that was very interesting for me. Like, at least there wasn't a hole in the ground, but we just had like a little toilet bowl, and you had just buckets of water on the side, no toilet paper. So that was quite interesting. And you just scoop the bucket of water and pour it over you to wash yourself every day. And we had, our door was kind of made of just wooden slats kind of knocked together. It didn't quite cover the whole frame of the door, so if anyone walked past, you could kind of see them doing their business, which is a bit embarrassing. But So the ceiling and walls were kind of like all the sums were the same. Were just made of scraps of wood and tin and concrete, all nailed and tied together. And the houses were crammed side by side, sharing the same thin walls. So as you can imagine, there wasn't much privacy at all. And there would always be a constant hum of noise and life in the slum, no matter what time of the day or night it was. The smell wasn't as bad as I thought it would be, but definitely not exactly pleasant. The air was really thick of pollution. Like, I remember after our first couple of days, when we all got together, we're like, oh, did you, like, pick your nose? And it was, like, really black and stuff. Yeah, kind of gross, but, yeah, we're all kind of amazed by it. And we also, like, grab, like, a wet wipe, and you just kind of wipe your face or something and just come out black. Like, the pollution was so thick. And then our slum was quite clean from rubbish compared to some of the other slums. But I remember walking across the small river, like I think it was shown up on the PowerPoint, that went through the area, and it was just like a dark, murky green-brown with floating plastic bags and bits of rubbish and a thick stench that would just waft from it. Yeah.
There's a proverb that goes like this. We see from where we stand. What it's suggesting that if we're looking over here and we're standing in this place, this is what we see. But if we remove ourselves and get our feet moving and stand over here, wow, we suddenly see a whole different part of what there is around us. And I can see you beautiful people now. If we place ourselves into a neighborhood where it's broken, what happens to us is that we start to smell the air. And the first thing that gets hit is our heart. Our heart gets moved. And often it's compassion that comes out. And a compassion is a gift that God gives to us. But what quickly follows compassion is our mind. And our mind starts to kick in. And the scales on our eyes start to fall. And as the mind kicks in and the mind starts to work, what naturally follows is that our feet and our hands will start to kick into action. And this is how change happens. When we walk into a new space, like over here, we start to see things very differently. And this is what's happened to our young people when we went to the slums. But an urban missionary, a guy called Bruce Main, he said that this is critical for the process of changing our hearts and for embracing Christ's heart for the poor. We need to leave our circles of privilege and adjust our perceptions and assumptions of the world. And when I think of New Zealand, I think of places and communities where there's lots of housing and Z homes. And often there's assumptions about what these neighborhoods are like, where the gangs are, where solo parents are, people are lazy, where there's domestic violence, where there's drugs. And these perceptions often have been given to us through TV or through the media. But what I found happens is that when we move into these neighborhoods, when we build relationships with people, and when we hear the stories behind the stories, usually not the first story, it's usually the story behind it, then a completely different scenario is painted. And we start to hear stories around determination and a deep, deep appreciation of relationships. There's vision. People are strong because life has thrown a harshness towards them, and somehow they find the strength to keep going. Very resourceful. Amazing what they can do with nothing. And what's always blown me is they have such a deep and wise perception about what life is all about. And when we change our assumptions and our preconceived ideas, this is how change happens. And this is how adjust society in New Zealand can start to happen. And it's done by number one, and that's through friendships. everything we do is in friendships. And when we have a genuine friendship, only in that place can we hear the stories of the struggles. And we can also hear the ideas that our neighbors have about how to bring change to those struggles. And you'll be blown away by the ideas that are there. And we become more sensitive to the issues of injustice, the issues that keep the poor poor.
Over the couple of weeks, I became really close with the people who lived around me and my family. They're really interested in hearing about New Zealand and how different it was. Every day I would sit inside with my family or outside on the bench with my neighbours or play games with all the kids and just talk and laugh. And in those moments, I got to hear the stories of the people who lived there. A story that really stood out to me was one from a young woman called Jonah. She was about 23 years old and had just recently moved in with her brother and sister who lived a few houses down. She told me that when she was young, about 10 or so, her parents broke up. And her and her two younger siblings, her sister and her brother, were moved each to different places. She was brought up by her grandmother, who also lived in a squatter community. But when she was 16 years old, she moved out and into a different slum with her sister. At 16 years old, Jonah was still in high school, but worked hard to survive. Both her parents by now had their own families and had left them to survive on their own. She said that she worked two jobs. One was at 6 a.m. before school, and the second was straight after school. She told me that on her way to school from her first job, she would go and buy cheap candy and sell it to her classmates so she could pay for her transport to get home. Each day was a struggle, and despite working two jobs, Jonah could no longer pay her fees in her second year of college. And she couldn't also pay for her transport and her food and her power. She would budget wisely, spending her money on only things that she and her sister needed, but it wasn't enough. So Jonah swallowed her pride and begged her tutor to let her come and stay at her house in the weekend to cook, to clean, buy groceries, and do any errands for her, knowing that her tutor had no children herself. Her tutor accepted, and she was paid 100 pesos a day, about equivalent to $3 New Zealand dollars. A couple of months passed and Jonah came into contact with her brother, whom she hadn't seen in years. They decided to move into the house that they're staying at now, the one just a few houses down from where I was staying. She was so grateful to finally have all her siblings living under one roof again, and she wanted the best for her brother. She told me that in order to give him the best, she needed to sacrifice her education for him so she could save her money to pay for his college fees. And so she did, and I even got to meet her brother, and he's 21, and he's currently studying criminology. But the whole time Jonah was telling me the story, I felt like crying at the struggles she's gone through and how hard she's worked and how much she has sacrificed. Yet the whole time she was telling me this, she was smiling. She told me that she had to lift her head up and just move on because the world keeps moving whether we like it or not. Her words and her story really touched my heart, and like Jonah, I noticed so many other brave smiles amongst the faces around me. These people have so little, but I was amazed at the laughter, the stories, the genuine happy smiles, and the close relationships among neighbours and how connected the community was. So many people that I came across on the trip were so thankful for everything they had, no matter how big or how small it was, and everything they received was always seen as a huge blessing. They valued friendships, not money, not materials, but friendships.
The story that we read this morning from Mark is a classic example of Jesus moving his feet. He was in the center of a crowd, and he moved his feet, and he stood by a beggar. A beggar in New Zealand, and beggar back then, a blind beggar, is as low as you can go in terms of in terms of the social significance of someone. And while the rest of the crowd, they rebuked the blind beggar and told him to go away, Jesus welcomed him. And by welcoming him, he stood and entered the poor man's world. And while others assumed that the beggar wanted money and food. Jesus challenged that assumption. And this is what often happens when we enter into this place. And by he empowered the man with a question. Interesting question. What do you want from me? This is a real significant question. Because Jesus, he didn't impose his agenda and his preconceived ideas about what this person needed. He didn't assume. And instead, he affirmed the man with the only thing that this man possessed, and that was his voice. He honored him. I don't know, can you imagine what it would be like to rely on people's charity day after day, week after week, year after year, to have the dust kicked into your face, to wear the daily rebukes, and to pretend that you're grateful for the few cents that are dropped into your bowl. Receiving charity from people over an extended period of time is shameful and it's demeaning. And many people that I know that are reliant on it resent their dependence. And many that I know want to walk into another place and earn their living. See, the blind man, the beggar, he didn't want to beg for the rest of his life. He wants to be healed. He wants to see. And because Jesus was willing to stand in a new place and to engage with the beggar, he really revealed what the beggar really wanted. The beggar wanted to join the community that he came from and to fully participate as someone who was whole and healed in the life of that community. It was far more than just the healing of the eyes. It was about a pathway into that place to be fully accepted as someone who can participate in a wholesome and decent way. See, Jesus, he didn't see the beggar as someone on the side of the road that was dirty, but he saw him as someone made in the image of God. Someone who reflects and glorifies that image. Instead of someone who was lonely, instead of someone that was dependent, Jesus removed himself from the crowd, creates a space, and he gives time to listen. He gives time to learn. And he invites the blind man to participate together in the healing of himself. And this is the same for our surrounding neighborhoods. Let us, like Jesus, create the spaces to listen to our neighbors, wherever you are, to learn and to invite. And this is how a just world is built.
So Jonah's story really got me thinking during the trip. And I'd just like to share with you something that I wrote in my journal towards the end of our trip in the Philippines. And it's kind of like what poverty or the poor came to mean to me during my stay. So a big thing I noticed during my stay in the slums was that the poor are actually blessed in a way which I've not seen much of in New Zealand. Despite being poor, having no money, living in a slum house, eating little, being open to lots of sicknesses, surviving day by day, many people contain the sense of happiness and peace and joy that seems never-ending. There is struggle and pain, but running parallel with this is also inner beauty. The poor seem so rich in life, people, relationships, and character, whereas the wealthy, us, are rich in money and materials, but poor in relationships and neighborhood. So are the poor actually poor? I mean, yes, they're struggling and hurting immensely. So why do they have this richness that we don't see much of in New Zealand? Is it because they live similar to how Jesus expects us to live, which is simply? Or is it because their poverty has forced many to rely on the things which are stable in their lives, like God and relationships, things that last for eternity? Or is it because they are, in a sense, hopeless, so God has blessed them? I don't know. But one thing I do know is that I have a lot to learn from these people. The trip has been so much more than just an exposure. It has changed who I am and the way I see things, and I hope this will never change.
It's been 6 weeks now since we've returned from Manila, and all of us are learning to move our feet and to hang with our neighbours and with our young people and to embrace them with love. And I think if there's one thing that we've all learnt from the trip is that to be able to love our neighbour is a great risk, because we have to become vulnerable. And when we become vulnerable, we invite suffering. And love is a choice to be vulnerable for the sake of the other. Love is vulnerable. And unconditional love must also mean unconditional vulnerableness. God is vulnerable. He risked everything to love us. And I think this morning, Vanessa shared something that she's never shared to anyone. And she did that because when she moved her feet and went into the slums, expecting to see a community full of need, she was blessed by a mum, a solo mum, who just poured her love into her and loved her as a mum. Something that Vanessa hasn't felt for years. And Vanessa feels safe, safer now, to share that with you. Well, 8 weeks ago, she would never have done that. And it's amazing how when we make ourselves vulnerable and when we move our feet and we move into another place and we think that we're going to be full of compassion and love and meet the need, the opposite happens and we become blessed by the way that the love comes back to us. God bless. Thank you for listening. Thank you for allowing us to share our experience with you all. And just to end today's service, what I'd like us to do is just to turn to our neighbour that's sitting next door to you and to share one neighbour that you know on your street and together pray for that neighbour. And when you've finished your prayer, just quietly and respectfully just stand and walk out the door, and we can have our cup of coffee over there. But just go quietly, because others will still be praying. So just turn to your neighbor and pray for a neighbor. Thank you.